2 hours ago, Allied Air Forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is In the News.
Welcome to In the News on Holy Family Radio, where we bring you the news with a Catholic perspective. I'm your host, Eleanor Rossman, and with us this week is our dear friend, Father John Trigilio. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Surviving.
Surviving. Survive all that snow.
The snow in the news. I don't know where to start, but let's get started. So much to talk about right now. We usually start with news at the Vatican, so I'm not going to deviate too much from that. One of the big things is, we've got this meeting upcoming at the Vatican on the Sex Abuse Summit. Mm-hmm. And recently, we've heard some chatter that our Holy Father has said, don't get your, I'm misquoting, but don't get your hopes up too high because, it may not be exactly what you think it's going to be. And, this is an ongoing problem and yada, yada, yada. In fact, there was a very recent communique from the Holy See Press Office by Alessandro Gisotti, and he said the following, quote, "The February meeting on the protection of minors has a concrete purpose. The goal is that all of the bishops clearly understand what they need to do to prevent and combat the worldwide problem of the sexual abuse of minors. Pope Francis knows that a global problem can only be resolved with a global response. The Pope wants it to be an assembly of pastors, not an academic conference, a meeting characterized by prayer and discernment, catechetical working together." That sounds good, except what concerns some people is that it is being limited to the topic of abuse of minors, which is always a terrible thing. But let me just be very specific. An article written by Monsignor Charles Pope said, there's three keys to credibility to this upcoming meeting. And I'll just ask you to comment on each one of these. He has three things. First one, he said the summit must focus on more than the sexual abuse of minors. What do you think about that, Father? I realize I'm asking your opinion.
I understand what Monsignor's saying. I want people to know that this is the highest priority, though, that the protection of minors, since they can't protect themselves.
Right.
So it's so urgent that, that be seen as the first and foremost. That's the high priority, is protecting the minor. And that includes not just the prepubescent minors, which is real pedophilia, but also the teenagers who are not legally adults yet, but the preponderance of these cases of abuse involve not prepubescent kids, but a postpubescent, which means it's ephebophilia, and 90% or more of these are, same-sex crimes done by clergy to young boys or adolescent boys. That's never really been addressed completely. I mean, they sort of lumped it all together, and the small percentage of pedophilia, which at one case is just too much.
Right.
But statistically, it's a small percentage of priests attacking boys and girls who are not yet reached puberty. But the vast majority are teenage boys. And this is it's a homosexual issue. And then that leads into the next thing of priests misbehaving among themselves and among adults. So I can see where he says it can't just be limited to minors, but that has to be seen as the priority. That comes first. So if it's going to be three things, they're not three of equal attention. I would say that the abuse of minors must be the highest priority. And then the next one, where priests and bishops and cardinals are misbehaving with men, women, whatever. Of legal age. And then the third would be the cover-up, the denial, the cover-up, the transfers, the Lavender Mafia, all that stuff. So in that regard, yes, I say three things, but I would say that they're graduated levels of severity.
And you know what? That is an important point to mention, that when we say minors, when we think of minors, we're thinking of children under maybe 12 years of age, but it's not really the case. They're 18 and under. So that does include that those teenage boys. That's important. I think you probably covered this, but his second point was he said the summit must establish a way forward for greater accountability for bishops. So when you were talking about covering things up and are you guys talking about the same thing here?
Yes, I would say because that's part of the accountability. Is one part of accountability is the actual culprits, the priests, deacons, bishops, and cardinals who actually do the bad things, who are the sexual deviants and perverts. And, you know, that's not limited just the lower clergy, the priests and the deacons, as we've seen, mm-hmm. as high up as cardinals have done horrible and despicable things. And especially with the case with Cardinal McCarrick, he did it with mostly seminarians
yeah.
who were adults legally, mm-hmm. but it was an abuse of his power,
right.
just like we saw in Hollywood and Broadway and all the other entertainment industry and corporate America, you name it, mm-hmm. TV and whatnot. So yeah, that whole realm of accountability for me would be how the bishops address these issues and how do they address when one of their own
yeah.
is found guilty. Because, you know, the Dallas Charter originally was intended to incorporate all the clergy.
Right.
And it was Cardinal McCarrick who intervened and said, no, mm-hmm. we can't, you know, police ourselves, and this is reserved to the Holy See. So they exempted the bishops, which was, you know, ironic that he wanted to show deference to the Holy See, because it was the same Cardinal McCarrick who, when Cardinal Ratzinger at the time sent him a note asking him to read it to all the bishops at election time, saying that Catholics can't in conscience vote for a candidate who openly
right.
supports abortion.
Mm-hmm.
He sat on that.
Yeah.
He sat on it mm-hmm. purposely, intentionally, mm-hmm. and it was leaked by an Italian journalist after the election.
You know, this is off a topic a little bit, but why do you think he sat on that? Because does that have, you know, I'm remembering now when you know, we were looking to our cardinals, bishops, maybe it was that letter, to say something to these politicians who continue, and we'll get into that in the next.
Well, it was when John Kerry was running for president.
Right, and they present themselves for communion, and it's like, wait.
And the thing was that, mm-hmm. You know, people had been speculating, and I don't know if there's any truth to this, but, you know, had Kerry won the election, mm-hmm. then he would have been a Catholic president, and, of course, the Cardinal Archbishop of Washington, who was McCarrick at the time, would have had access then to the White House.
Right.
So, you know, there's sort of people I've talked to said that was a strong motivating factor. But also this idea that, you know, some of the cardinals and bishops, and even some priests, you know, are sort of wishy-washy when it comes to the pro-life policy of yeah. the church, that mm-hmm. we are always adamantly 100% pro-life.
Right.
And that there's no wiggle room. And Cardinal Ratzinger made that very clear in the letter he sent, especially in the nota bene that was at the bottom of the page, mm-hmm. and said that not everything is of equal issue, so that you could disagree with the Holy Father on prudential judgments, on just war, on the death penalty, but there's no wiggle room, no room for latitude for discrepancy. You had to be 100% pro-life, that all abortion at any stage, at any time, was morally not permissible. It was considered a mortal sin and grave evil.
You know, that reminds me of, I think it was Cardinal Bernardin and that whole idea of the seamless garment.
Yes.
Remember when that came out, it was like, well, you know, there are these, it basically, to me, was saying that all of these things are equally important.
That's what, you know, and I know that's, technically, that's not what the cardinal said, but that's how it was interpreted,
mm-hmm.
and that's how it was applied. And I remember when that issue came about, I was a parochial vicar in Hershey, and somebody from a member of the secular press had asked me, you know, what was my opinion on that. And I said, you know, I think it's a prudential judgment that I don't necessarily agree with.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you cannot treat abortion in the same way you treat other issues like poverty,
immigration,
mm-hmm. Building the wall,
mm-hmm.
all these other issues that people were talking about, even the death penalty and whether, you know, going into Iraq or Afghanistan, these are all legitimate concerns.
Right.
but they're not of equal value. The right to life is the first and foundational right and issue, because without the right to life, none of the other rights exist.
Amen. All right, to wrap up this article by Monsignor Charles Pope, the third point he made, and again, I think you spoke to this a little bit, that he said the summit must speak to the link between homosexuality and sexual abuse by clergy. Does that need to be, you know, taken head on here?
No, it does.
Okay.
But I don't necessarily think that you can do justice by doing everything all at once. First and foremost is on the issue of minors and how we address what was done in the past, mm-hmm. making reparations, you know, like the Bishop of Erie did, Bishop Persico. He came out and just very plainly said, I'm sorry for what priests of the diocese had done in the past. And for a lot of the victims, they wanted to hear somebody say, I'm sorry, not just, mm-hmm. oh, we're doing this, we're doing that. They want to hear those words, I'm sorry, even though he himself did not do anything
right.
wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, on behalf of all the priests of all the diocese, we're sorry that any one of us was involved in that. And that's so crucial. And I think what our bishop's doing with providing access to counseling and providing help for people, that's another wonderful step, because it's not just saying, okay, well, these things happened in the past.
Right.
No, we're trying to, you know, make compensation here without mm-hmm. it sounding like, you know, we're you know, you can
we're
never
just
make
buying people off or something.
Yeah, and you can never make up for what was
no,
happened.
No.
But you can, in justice, provide help for those who were, in all these cases, many, you know, innocent victims. But one thing I still want to point out is that, you know, it's not just a sexual issue. That's the first and foremost,
mm-hmm.
but it's a threefold problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad morality in terms of sexuality and the abuse of children and the homosexual network, but it's also bad theology.
Yeah.
Because we got priests and even bishops who are denying humani vitae,
mm-hmm.
who are trying to change dogma and doctrine. And then it's bad liturgy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, you know, lex orandi, lex credendi, how we worship coincides with what we believe. And all three are all connected organically. And I think once that's admitted and addressed, then we have a chance of fixing things. But if we just treat it as totally separate, isolated issues, then we're not.
Okay. Father, hold that thought. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back in just a minute with Father John Trigilio and In the News.
I'm Mike Creevy, Development Coordinator at Holy Family Radio, and I'm excited to announce that our annual WHYF Benefit Dinner is right around the corner on Friday, March 1st. As you know, listener support is the only way we can keep up the work of evangelizing on air and online through our faith-nourishing programs. Our keynote speaker is Bill Donahue, Senior Lecturer, Content Specialist, and Certification Program Instructor for the Theology of the Body Institute. Learn more by visiting 720WHYF.com and the Holy Family Radio Facebook page. Thank you and God bless.
We are back within the news with Father John Trigilio, and we were just speaking in the first part of the program about the upcoming summit on clergy abuse, and I want to move into something else that's been in the news, and that is this Governor Cuomo of New York has recently signed, and I would say celebrated, I don't think anybody would argue with me, this abortion bill. That would pretty just takes any restrictions out of, away from abortion from the very beginning to the very end, even after a baby's born. So this he and Cardinal Dolan now are going back and forth about this whole thing. So let's start there. So Cuomo said, who is a Catholic, said recently, quote, while Cardinal Timothy Dolan, the Archbishop of New York, and the Catholic Church are anti-choice, most Americans, including most Catholics, are pro-choice. Father, I think you would disagree with that statement.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, look at the March for Life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have no credibility to say that most Americans or most Catholic Americans are pro-choice. Now, they can make an argument that most Americans are not 100% anti-abortion. I mean, there is a few people who make some exceptions which the church does not recognize. The natural moral law does not make any exceptions for, you know, rape or incest because the unborn is innocent. You know, how the person was conceived has no bearing on the fact that it's still an innocent human life.
Mm-hmm.
And but yet there's some people who are, you know, claim that as a legitimate exception, but that's a completely different issue. I would say most Americans and most Catholic Americans do not want abortion on demand at any level.
Right.
And they're making it sound as if, oh, no, the Catholic Church is in the minority. No, we're not. I mean, we may not be in the total majority in that we absolutely oppose abortion at any stage.
Mm-hmm.
But most people do not want abortion at any stage, that at any time they have little preferences or whatever like that. And that's not how it's usually portrayed in the press. You know, they make it sound like everybody's against the church and, you know, the church remains solid, pro-life 100%. But we have to admit that there are people who are, you know, and Cardinal Ratzinger made that point in that letter that I mentioned to in our last segment, that, you know, if you have two candidates running and one's more pro-life than the other, well, the one that's running may not be 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But if that person is 80% pro-life and the other opponent is 20% pro-life, you got to vote for the one who's 80%.
Right, right. It was in response to this abortion law that was enacted in the state of New York, Bishop Thomas Daley of the Diocese of Spokane, Washington, issued a pastoral letter in which he instructed all unrepentant pro-abortion politicians in his diocese to refrain from receiving Holy Communion. Father, lots of Catholics are calling for Cardinal Dolan to excommunicate Cuomo because, well, this just seems like it's so over the top. And here he keeps making reference to, oh, I'm Catholic. I was an altar boy when I was young. You know, he kind of wears it when it suits him.
Mm-hmm.
And it scandalizes those of us who, you know, are trying to practice our faith and trying to be true to the teachings of the church. And yet he keeps coming out with these statements about, well, you know, I'm Catholic and I don't govern as a Catholic. I don't legislate as a Catholic.
Yeah.
But so make the case. Why can't Cardinal Dolan say what Bishop Daley in Spokane is saying, that even if you say, well, you're not technically excommunicated, these people should not present themselves for communion?
Exactly. I think that he made it very clear, the bishop, that, you know, any politician who openly endorses and promotes abortion, especially, but not limited to abortion on demand at any stage, but particularly those people like Cuomo, need to be told that they should not present themselves for Holy Communion. Now, the penalty of excommunication, as it stays in the Code of Canon Law, is for those who directly procure an abortion. So the person, whether it's the mother or the father, the doctor who performs it, they incur the excommunication automatically.
Okay.
It's not very clear that, and I've talked to some canon lawyers, that it doesn't seem as if the politician automatically is excommunicated, but they can be excommunicated. That can be a penalty, which the bishop can threaten with. And that's the key here, is that excommunications are not meant just to be penal. They're also meant to be remedial, that a person who's excommunicated hopes to undo the excommunication. So you say to someone, look, don't do this, and then you won't be excommunicated. Or if you are excommunicated, change your tune and we'll lift it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not meant just to be a one-time thing. And there is a process, a due process that needs to take place. But I think the threat of excommunication is still valid and should be used. And even if it's not employed, there's still the canons that apply to who's worthy in receiving Holy Communion. And Cardinal Burke made that clear, too, that politicians who support abortion should not present themselves for communion.
Mm-hmm.
He's not saying they're excommunicated de facto,
right?
You know, but he's saying that they should not present themselves in the same way somebody who's opposed to, you know, dogmas of the church. You know, there's a whole list of things where when you go to communion, you're saying, I'm in communion. And if you're promoting, you know, same-sex marriages or, you know, divorce and remarriage or polygamy or any number of things, you're not in communion.
Right.
So, you really shouldn't be going to communion until you reconcile yourself doctrinally, morally, and spiritually with the church.
In Andrew Cuomo's case, too, and this is something that's on his website. I mean, he's very open about the fact that he's divorced and is living with
his girlfriend.
Yeah, the one with the cooking channel, whatever. Seriously. And it's like, well, you know, he's proud of it, you know, and I just think, you know, I pray for him and everybody else that's pro-abortion, but I think sometimes it leaves other people wondering, like, you know, are we weak? Are we afraid as a church to punish, you know, and that's tough, isn't it?
It is. And I think, like, for instance, whenever they have masses at the Basilica, the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in D.C., I remember very vividly I was there, and I forget what the mass was for, but the nuncio was there, Archbishop Zambi, and he passed away. And I think it was Vice President Biden. It was either him or
Kerry.
Could have been Kerry. One of them, who was a prominent pro-abortion Catholic politician, went right to communion.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously that's not the place for the nuncio to just cause a scene and say, no, sit down. But someone should have went to them ahead of time while they're sitting in the pew and say, His Eminence, His Grace, prefers or asks that you not come forward.
You know,
can stay in the pew, and nobody needs to interpret what's going on there, because maybe you had a donut on the way to church and you didn't have your hour fast, you know?
Right. You know, and if you've ever been to the Vatican, which I was fortunate enough to have done that once, if you don't come in there with the proper attire, you're not getting in. I mean, that's not the only church over in Europe, too. There's several of them. It's St. Mark's and so on. So, I don't know. It just seems like...
Well, Mother Angelica has that in Hansville, the Eucharistic Shrine.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not wearing appropriate attire, they won't let you in.
Yeah,
they'll loan you for free some sweatpants and a sweater so that you don't come in immodestly, and nobody squawks about it. But here in the United States... And the other thing, too, about going down to the shrine, when people go to the Vatican, especially when Pope Benedict was Pope, he did as few heads of state as possible, because he was concerned that somebody who was not in full communion, who was either pro-abortion or married invalidly, just because they're a head of state, would automatically come up and receive communion.
Right.
And so he did it sparingly.
Yeah.
For that very reason.
Because you're right. It can be used as a photo op. And it's...
Exactly.
You know... Speaking of squawking, Senator Cory Booker, who announced that he's running for president in 2020, he's a Democratic senator, used a confirmation hearing of the Senate Judiciary Committee to question judicial nominee Naomi Rao, I think that's how you say it, about her views on the, quote, sinfulness of same-sex marriage. He asked her if she had ever employed an LGBTQ law clerk. Well, she said, I've never been a judge, so I haven't employed a law clerk. And then Senator Ted Cruz said, you know what, this is getting ridiculous, this growing pattern among Senate Democrats of hostility to religious faith. This isn't the only case. Remember that woman from, she's a senator from Hawaii, Haroni, whatever, and the other one that announced for president, what is her name from California? She also recently was questioning...
Feinstein?
Not Feinstein, the, I can't think of her name now. She was a former AG in California. I don't know how I can't think of it, but she, they were questioning a particular, law appointment to the courts about their connection to the Knights of Columbus and any Catholic affiliation.
Yes.
It's like, this is ridiculous, don't you think?
So, well, it's ridiculous because they isolate and they say, well, anyone who's affiliated with the Knights of Columbus are belonging to a fanatical group. But
Kamala Harris, who I was thinking of. Okay.
And never once did I ever hear them say, oh, so-and-so belongs to the Freemasons.
Yeah.
He belongs to the Masonic Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Shriner.
Mm-hmm.
These are all fraternal associations. And if anybody had the moniker of a secret association, it's been the Masons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they themselves, you know, admit that they're, you know, they've got their secrets. They're legal. Okay, they're not plotting to overthrow the government or anything, but nobody ever brings that up. You belong to the Freemasons, but you belong to the Knights of Columbus, who the Knights of Columbus have never once endorsed a political party or a political candidate. They do promote pro-life, mm-hmm. and they say you must vote pro-life, but they don't tell you what party, they don't tell you what they'll give you a list of what all the candidates and give you the political platforms for all the parties. Yes, that's so you could be an informed voter when you go into the ballot booth there. But just because you're Knights of Columbus, mm-hmm. and this thing about hiring LGBTQT, whatever the other letters are, most jobs, they don't ask you.
What's your sexual preference?
Yeah, exactly. Now, here's one I would definitely say, you're going to see this down the line pretty soon. Transgendered.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there's going to be a big problem because it's one thing to say what people do. You don't ask them on the form what's your sexual orientation and what they do off of, when they're out of work. But
Father, I'm gonna have to stop you here because we're out of time, and the next show we're in next week, we're gonna talk about that whole issue with transgender, how that's gonna affect all these issues. But we invite all of our listeners to join us every Thursday at noon on AM 720 on Holy Family Radio for In the News with Father John Trigilio. Father, I'll talk to you next week. God bless you.
God bless.